A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today, we're speaking with Michael Panheisen about what it's like to take part in the Barclay Marathons.
What? The inevitable, we've absolutely got straight in on the Barclays, despite, you know, trying to be cool about it. It's fascinating.
So, we were giddy about it last week, weren't we? I feel like we were like doing a lot of watching on Twitter and sort of, you know, theorizing.
Yeah, I genuinely think that's part of it.
Yes,
lack of information makes it more enticing in this day and age where everything's immediately available. So perhaps that's, you know, credit to their slick marketing team at the Barclay, which is exactly what they're famous for. But yeah, it's definitely there's that element to it. Not a dot to watch or anything. There's just some sounding out on the internet here and there about what might be happening.
But, yeah, a lot of fake news at the Barclay, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, and a lot of interesting stuff. Quite sort of, I don't know, controversial, interesting. It's a race that sort of is delivering all sorts of stuff. But yeah, to speak to Michael,
I think it's actually Mikhail, but he was good enough to allow me to call him Michael.
Let's call him Michael.
He's a Dutch journalist and ultra run. He's run the Barclay 5 times, so that's a lot.
It's an interesting standpoint to meet someone who's done it 5 times, has also written a book about it, and this was the first thing that they ever did.
Yeah,
which is wild.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it? Right, for anyone who doesn't know much about Barclay, I'm no expert, but just very quickly, it's probably the hardest ultramarathon in the world, I'd say. Most years, no one finishes.
Let's say that. I'm sort of wary about these sorts of things.
I know what you mean, yeah.
But anyway, it's a famously difficult race.
Yeah, in Tennessee, in Frozen Head State Park, I think is where it is. Loads of climbing, loads of rumours about what makes it so difficult. You've got to do it in 60 hours, and it's roughly 100 miles. And this year was amazing, wasn't it? Because I think for the second time in its history, there were three finishers, which is almost unprecedented. That's like an absolute bumper crop.
I think what piqued our interest as well is that we've spoken to Damien a good few times on here and in just in life in general. And we've talked about the Barclays before, and he's always been keen. So it was great to see him out there. And that really kind of, I think, piqued our interest. Obviously, Jasmine, we've spoken to too, and that was, it was nice to sort of cheer on people that you know.
So, some British interest, isn't there? Yeah, so Damien Hall, what, fifth loop? And then, no, I think he got lost or something, or fell asleep. And then, Jasmine Paris, loop 4. So it's kind of, you know what? I really think, if Damien goes back, I really think he can do it. And I think Jasmine Paris can do it as well. And that would be, I'd be even more excited by the race if there was, like, you know, some more British finishers. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be amazing for sure.
Right, so look, should we get on? We'll get out our guest of the week and talk some more about the Barclay Marathons.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Okay, so our guest this week is author and ultra runner Michael Panheisen. Michael has competed in multiple Barclay Marathons and has a book In the Spell of the Barclay, which is available to order now. So, Michael, welcome to the podcast. And also, tell us how you first got involved in this crazy race.
Yeah, it's a very funny story at all. There is no website or any other trustworthy information, let's say, online about this race. I just knew about this race for the first time when someone a Belgian runner put who was participating in a previous year explained about this race on his personal weblog. It was at the time, it was about 2010 when I remember well, and he was describing a very weird event in which you had to write a letter like applying for a job to participate at first. And when you are allowed to participate at this race, the start was given by lighting a cigarette instead of shooting a pistol, or there were some very weird, particular, extraordinary, strange for me things happening at that race. And in the description about the race that I read from this runner, he said there was in 2009 there was one finisher, and so one finisher, and it was like the 10th or the 11th finisher at that time in the history of the race. And these kind of elements were so strange for me and really put my attention on this race. So for me, at that moment, running was just something like participate, maybe something like a marathon or a half marathon or a 10 kilometers race, or I don't know, some sprint races and Olympic Games. And I never heard about something so strange like this. And this drew my attention, and this is why I was diving into it. Yeah.
How did you get then from reading this, talking to your friend about this strange race, to the start line? Because that's, that's often, I think that lots of people who've been watching or following it this weekend will have the same thoughts. Will just be like, well, that's something I'd like to do. How did you get there? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for me, this was a kind of a story. Like I said, in 2010, I got in contact for the first time with the concept of the race. So I knew there was something called Barclay, or that a runner said to me that there was something called Barclay, but I couldn't find any proof if, for example, if he had been there really. You know, like maybe this is just a fake race and this doesn't exist at all. So already in 2010, if it's not on the internet, it's not there, you know, like this was in my mind. So I started to do some research and couldn't find anything about the race until I found one website from someone who did it before. He's called Matt Mahoney. It's a dentist from Florida, when I remember well. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what he's doing here. And he's giving a description of almost all of the races, all of the editions in history from the start in 1986. And there's a lot of race reports that you can find on this website. And he was also talking about one particular book. It's a book from Ed Furto, Frozen Ed Furto. It's called Tales from Out There. And I could order the book. I managed to get the book because I was really interested, you know, like in finding any small part of information about this race. And in the book, I found an email address of Frozenet from the author, and I got in contact in this way. And then he was very excited about my, you know, like about me looking for him and for looking for information. And then I made a telephone call because he gave me a telephone number. So I called him in Colorado at that time. The call was so full of enthusiasm, and it was so so lively. I was so close to the Barclay at the time that there was this very strange feeling, almost love, let's say, for this race. And he just said, Froesenaert said to me, the race is in 3 weeks, Mick. He called me Mick. Why don't you just come over and visit the race? And so I said, no, it's a lot of money and I have to organize this my life. And it was only, you know, like, not for participating at the race, but to visit the race. And so that night I was in my bed and I couldn't sleep. And in the end, one day later, I had a coffee at my breakfast and my wife said, Mick, I think you have to go. So I bought a ticket and 1 hour later I could send at an email that I will see you in 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
During this race weekend, all the people over there asked me, who is this guy from the Netherlands, from Europe? What is he doing here? He's not even participating. He's not even an ultra runner. I'd never run an ultra in my life at that time. And it captured me so much that it started. So slowly I got in, like, it's like a virus. I got trapped and I was into it. And of course, then some months later, or when it's time for doing all the procedures, I could manage pretty easy. They just told me the entry procedures because, I was one of them, let's say. So it looked like something normal to happen, that I went to the Barclay. So it was not that, I always said, it's not that I choose the Barclay, but the Barclay chose me.
Yeah. I love that. And that first year then, so you're there, right? And you're not a particularly experienced ultra runner at that point.
No.
How on earth does it go? What's that first year like? What do you learn about the Barclay? And how do you feel when you presumably don't finish like everyone else?
Yeah, no, what normally happens if you are a virgin, let's say, they call it a virgin. If you are participating for the first time, you're called a virgin. And the ones who participated in like the second or third or more times, they are called veterans. This is a typical Barclay thing, you know, like this virgins and veterans. And most of the virgins, at least at the time that I was participating as a virgin, they are just looking for a veteran around them and at the start, and they try to follow him. This is what they. But it has some risk in it, because if you follow this veteran who more or less knows how to go and where to go, this is not always like the case, because some veterans also got lost in the forest. But if you are running for, let's say, 3 or 4 hours in the forest and you didn't look at your map because you're following this guy ahead or this woman ahead of you, then if you go, for example, for a pee, or you stop, or you, I don't know, you lose the group or you lose the veteran, then you are stuck in the forest and you don't have a clue where you are. Even if you have a map, you have no clue where you are. You're somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And these are things that happen in every Barclay edition. And okay, this is what didn't happen to me. But I followed Ed Froesenaert. It was the guy with whom I had all this contact and who, let's say, made it possible for me also to go there. And I tried to follow him. And the first loop, this was okay. I mean, I could follow him, and then, but I was a bit quicker than Ed in the interloopal period, which is called the period in between the two loops, before you start your second loop. And he just said, "Make go on your own." But then it was at night, and so I was there on my own in the second loop in nighttime, and. I was so scared. I mean, it's like the image that it's created around it, you know, like it's just a forest and nothing happens. Okay, you mean if you've no GPS at these times and you're in a dark forest and there is this myth around, you know, like this race that everyone is getting lost, then you really feel scared. And, you know, like every owl you hear, every bird, that it's like something very strange to happen for you. Yeah. Yeah.
So was it sort of, did you manage to do two loops the first time, or was that the end?
No, I in the end, Ed got me in between the first and second book, I think. So after some time, and I stayed with him again, the second loop and this part of the second loop. And I never run for more than 50 or 60 kilometers, I think, before I started there. It was just, you know, like to, I started because I really wanted to experiment this. But I didn't know, I didn't have a clue about what it is to run ultras. And so after 20, 24 hours, I started really getting very, very tired. And I just didn't know how to handle this. And I said, okay, now I cannot go on anymore. And relatively at a easy point, I said, I just quit. It's been enough. So, and this is because I didn't have any experience what it really means to go so far, so deep, because I didn't have done any really ultra race before. Because only after this, I learned a little bit what it means to do this ultra running and, you know, like to go to this limit. This is an interesting point, you know, like after 24 hours, 30 hours, you get to this point where everything hurts and you're very hungry and your stomach is upset and, you know, like you turn inside out and you're in a very bad shape or in a very bad situation, in a very bad place. Like Jared Campbell said sometimes. And that's the point where you have to try to find a way to go on. And this is a struggle. This is a mental struggle, mainly a mental struggle. It's not physical. Okay, it hurts, but this is normal after 24 hours of running. You know, like it hurts. Everything hurts. And nothing new. But if you want to finish, I mean, the race takes 50 hours at least. I think course record is 52 hours. So you need more than 2 days, you know, like to go on, and it's not finished after 1 day. You know, there are more races that I was going on for 4 or 5 days, and you know, like everything hurts after 1 day or 1 night, and it hurts even more after 2 nights, and it hurts even more after 3 nights. But if you have to go on still 2 nights and 2 days, well, you only get to the finish if you go on. And this is the process that you have to learn. And I was in the beginning of this stage, let's say, in my first Barclay.
Yeah. I think it's amazing that was like your entry into the ultra world. That like,
I agree.
Most
it's incredible
people who get into ultras is they've done maybe they've done 4 or 5 marathons. And then they choose like the 50K race is the next first step in because you know it's just that little bit further than the marathon, and they keep it local to where they live. They don't want to travel too far. And you went straight in with the hardest.
Yeah, but it was more like it was this story, you know. Like it's not for me. It was not the I was not going to do an ultra run. I was going to do the Barclay. And the Barclay was okay. Ultra run, but you know, if people know how to finish a marathon and they have this experience and they are just looking for some more challenge or they are bored, I don't know why people go from the marathon to an ultra marathon. I really don't know. But for me, it was, I didn't give, for me, it was not so important that it was ultra. It was it was this strange mystery with that was the legend. Yes, I was, even if it would have been like just no marathon, I would have gone for it, I think, you know, like it was this, I mean, that it was ultra, okay, well, good, but this was not the thing what I was doing. But it brought me finally into this ultra, because I learned that what ultra started to mean for me after the races I run after 2012. It was three or four more Barclays. I in the end I made 5 Barclays and never finished. But all the races, what happened there is that I came into this let's say area, part in your mind, part in your brain, which is called ultra. And ultra is, for me, became the area inside yourself which is beyond comfort, beyond this is nice, or it is all like suffering, or testing yourself, or pushing yourself. And I found this a very interesting terrain, let's say, in myself to discover and to find out who I am. I mean, this is also kind of the why you do such things. And so let's say I describe it mostly that the Barclay brought me into this ultra terrain territory. And because I wanted to train myself to become a better Barclay runner, I started to do ultras.
That's really interesting, because I think that's the promise of a race like this. That is, you know, I think there's a t-shirt that's something like meaningless suffering without a point.
I
think what you say and what I hope is true of something like Barclay is that you take this on and you become a different person as a result. It teaches you something about yourself, hopefully a more resourceful person. How did it change you? To have this ultra mindset, how is that in any way useful in kind of non-Barclay life?
I can give some examples. For example, if I have to take some train or a bus, and I know that I'm pretty late, you know, like this is mostly in my unorganized life, that I always have to run to take the train, you know. And when I'm with someone else, normally the people around me say, "We're not gonna make it, because we're so close. We're gonna miss the train, or we're gonna miss the metro, or whatever. You know, like we're gonna miss it." And I say, "No. Still, if we have a chance, you know, to get there, we will run until the last moment." You know, like so. Half of the time I see, you know, like the back part of the train going, and I'm lost, and I lost the race. And but half of the time I just catch it in time, you know, like in the last second. And this is one of the things, you know, like you learn if you do this kind of you know, like if you are in this training, you know, like go on. If you can, just go on. Don't let someone else say that it's not possible. Just see it with your own eyes. And if it's proven not to be possible, okay, then it's not possible. But you tried everything you could. So this try everything you can is one of the things you can learn, let's say, from this ultra. And the other is, for example, the training part is not physical, but it's mental. And the mental training part is, if you say it in an easy way, is just doing in your normal, in your ordinary life. So not with your running gear on, but just with, you know, normal clothes, going to your work, going to see friends, going to see your family, doing your life, living your life, is that if you meet some things, if there are happening some things around you that you don't like, just see it as a training. You know, like if you have to talk to a colleague which is not your favorite person, just try to be in like good with him or her, or just try to communicate with him or her, and not already before you have contact say no, I don't like it, because I really don't like this person. So in this way, this is also like training, you know, like something deep inside tells you no, not contact with this person. And you force yourself to be, you know, like to have a nice conversation with this person. So this is another thing, you know, like which is good training on one part. And if you do this from time to time, it also makes you a nice person around you. The other thing is, if you don't like, this is a very classical example. If you don't like to do the dishes, and you don't have like such a machine who does the dishes for you, you just go there and you know, you see all this dirty stuff from the night before, and you're just gonna clean it. You know, like, and you said, ah, I don't like it. I don't want this. I don't want to do it. And you just do it, and you do it because you don't want to do it. You know, like, so you, if you see it as a training to do, to clean all this rubbish, to clean all this shit from others around you, if you see this as a training, it's good for you. You know, like, because you, you train your mind, and on the other way, it affects you. You know, like, because you become a different person for your, for the people around you.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, it touches upon your book. There's a chapter of the 6 lessons learned from the finishers. And I think you've touched on one of them, become a human machine, I think, with the dishes is a good one.
Yes.
And you sort of talk about dare to jump into the deep and become fear is part and parcel of it. And you've got to stay humble. I think staying humble is quite an interesting one because I guess the ego that perhaps people assume comes with that race is probably what would stop a lot of people from finishing.
Yeah, I think this is... If you look at the persons who in history who finished the race, they, well, especially one for me, one my favorite one is Jared Campbell, from the American guy from Utah, and he's an extremely good athlete. But if you go and run, for example, together with him, I'm just, you know, like a normal guy. I'm not one of the elite runners, but Jared, if he meets me or if I meet Jared, he will ask me for how are you doing, how are you running, how is stuff going. So he's putting himself on the same position, on the same level as I am, and he's not behaving like a superhero. He is a superhero, but he's not behaving like this, and this makes him very accessible, I think. This is for outsiders, but it's also it makes this is the type of persons or personalities that have a good chance in this race, in this particular race. Like you said, that some people are blocked by their own egos. You know, like they it's. The Barclay is so strong, it will break any ego. So only if you have no ego to break, maybe...
You got a chance.
You got a chance.
I like that. Can we talk about like female finishers as well? Because obviously someone who fits that description, very humble, good runner, would be Jasmine Paris, who I think, you know, started a fourth loop this year. I think only second woman to do that. What do you think of her chances of running loop 5? What do you think of her as a runner? And I guess more broadly, like women getting closer to finishing, you know, the toughest ultra marathon in the world.
I'm sure for myself. Okay, I cannot be sure, but I think Jasmine makes a very, very good chance to. Maybe some other woman will be before her, but she will. She has some years, you know, like to go there, to go back to the race, and she has a real good chance to finish this race. She has the right attitude. She's also very humble. She's a very normal, very accessible person. She is not, you know, like telling big stories, even, you know, like about nothing. But on the other hand, she knows how to perform in such a very strong race. I mean, what she did before in the Spine, of course, it's amazing. You know, like the way in which she did this, this is like perfect. And, but also, like, she's behaving very well in the Barclay, because she made two consecutive years this year and the previous year in 2022. She made a fun run. I mean, a fun run is insane. It's very, very well done. I mean, this is very few people manage to run a fun run, to finish a fun run. So the fun run is like three of the five loops. And this year she even was in time for the within the 36 hours time limit, so she could go on for the fourth loop. In the history of this race, there are only very few finishers that managed to finish in their first or second Barclay. So normally you do some fun runs before, and then the third or fourth or fifth time that you participate, you manage to organize yourself so well, and you need a bit of luck, and you know, like, you know exactly about what's going on and during this race, and you know, like, then your chances will get better and better to finish the race. And it's also kind of respect, let's say, for such a cruel and difficult race, that you give the race some chance to win from you, you know, like beat you.
Yeah.
And you know, like the French guy who won this time, Sanchez, he didn't know probably that it was not done to finish at your first time. Like, he was a virgin and he finished, you know, like, and he won even. So yeah, I mean, this is beyond, you know, like, this is beyond the limitations. Yeah. This is not possible.
For you, Michael, like, what is there any particular aspect of the Barclay that makes it so difficult? Like, for instance, is it the sheer amount of climbing? Is it the navigation? Is it the legend? Is there something that sets it apart and makes it harder than other races?
It seems like it's a 100 miler and the time limit is 60 hours. So it looks like, okay, this is it's a very this is doable, let's say, you should think, from a distance. But if you look very well with the elevation per loop, then it's an extreme lot of elevation in very difficult terrain. And so the time limit of 12 hours for a 20-mile loop, it's pretty short, let's say. For one loop, it's okay, but for the second loop already many runners get in problem, like, and to do three loops within, you should do it within 30 hours and not within the allowed 36 hours, you know, like three times 12 hours it's allowed. But if you need this time cushion for the last two loops of 6 hours, it's 4, 5, 6 hours you need this extra time cushioning, because you will not be able to do it in the last few, you know, like to run these last few loops in due time. Yeah, I mean to say short, it's not a lot of time.
Yeah.
I think so. It's a short time.
That's true, because I think that probably people think, like, it's the terrain, because you see images of people being like shredded by the you know, the bushes getting cuts and like crawling through that, or it's the sort of inhospitable surroundings and things like that. But
don't underestimate this elevation thing. You know, it's not running. It's like going as fast as possible, but I mean, you cannot. The climbs are so steep. You
scrambling. Hands and knees crawling.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. It's great to talk to someone who's actually done it. I think it's just to get an insight. Yeah. Do you have to be a brilliant runner to finish this race? Are all the finishers absolutely exceptional runners, or do we have people in there who just brought something, Barclay just brought out something special in them? Maybe they haven't actually performed brilliantly in other races, but they had their greatest day at the Barclay. Is it possible for someone to just transcend kind of what they're otherwise capable of?
It's when I went the first time to Tennessee to like as a visitor to visit the race, I saw Brett Mooney. I think it's his pronunciation of his name, Brett, winning his first Barclay, and 1 year later he finished for a second time. He has actually the record of the course, so he ran the fastest Barclay in history, and he is not a runner; he's more like a speed hiker. Okay. And so this is a thing that he's a very strong hiker, let's say, and this is typically a place where very strong hikers out hike strong runners.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So this sounds strange, but it's a mix of runners and very strong hikers, and I think also Sanchez. He's a runner and a hiker. He's very strong in both of it, and this is what you need. So you need more than only running. And I think very many very good, very strong runners are not strong enough in hiking. And maybe for a runner it sounds a bit strange, but I think the fastest time on the 50 kilometer. The speed, like hiking, is 3 hours and 30 minutes. I don't know, I'm not sure, but it's under 4 hours. So this is faster than the fastest marathon I ever ran. So
yeah true. Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah, I mean.
It can be done.
It can be done, yeah. Yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
I think that the sort of the part of the legend of the whole event is probably Lazarus Lake. And sort of the, obviously you mentioned the lighting of the cigarette and the sort of the sort of weird things that sort of he brings that he's sort of set up as part of the race. What's it like? You know, I think people get an insight to the race via Keith Dunn on Twitter, and that's basically it. And Laz has probably done a few interviews here and there. What's he like on race day? What's he like when you're at the event? Is he a cool, collected guy, or is he sort of, you know, how does he steer that ship?
Well, Les is like you say, it's there's no Barclay without Les. Let's say his character is very, very, very important aspect of this race. When he's in the race, he has two sides. One is this, the side that everyone is seeing or willing to see, which is this strange guy, which has all these habits, smoking a lot of cigarettes all the time, smoking at the start. This smoking culture around this, it's very strange in this running community. And I think it's a little bit also why he is doing it, just to be against the normal procedures. And a lot of what he's doing is also psychological warfare. He's not telling you or the runners when they will start until 60 minutes, 1 hour before the race. He's announcing it. So it's very difficult. You most of the runners will not have a good sleep in the night before. His command is very strange, sarcastic sometimes. People who are liking this, other people, they prefer to be more pampered or having some positive words from the race director. But Laz is Laz. He's very typical, and he's also. But then most people agree on this, that he's playing like this part of it. Part of it is real, and part of it he's playing it. And on the other hand, it's like playing his character. He's also because for him it's also an ultra. It's not a young man. He's about 70 years old. So, and I think the last week he was staying awake during the first 2 days and nights of the race. So for imagine that he's also like he's very. It's his child. It's his baby. Let's say this race. So. He's a very good father of the race, and he's very concerned about you know, like everything which happened. And also, he has this emotional part, but you have to dig very deep and to be there and be very attentive if you want to see it. He doesn't show it, but sometimes he has to show it, you know, like, and then you see also that he's a very emotional man, and yeah, he has these two sides. But okay, he's a very good. He plays his role very strong, so yeah, you have to be very close and for a long time with him, and then you see like that he's just a normal man, like everyone of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and shining a light onto this. Very fascinating, obscure corner of the running world. And your book, In the Spell of the Barclays, available for people to pre-order now if they want to get the full scoop on what it's like to be enthralled to the Barclays. So thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Michael Panhuysen, and to you, of course, for listening.
Head over to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer to get an exclusive podcast listener offer. Oh. Man, that's incredible. I know, right? You can get 3 issues for just £5. So go there, runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.